kings, they heard strange noise, very fearsome for them. And they heard a great roars, terrible, terrifying roars. They were really scared. It is described in Mahabharata that some of them, they were ready to give up their life because of these roars. So these roars were coming actually from the flake of Arjuna. Because at that moment, when he was trying to, when he was going to fight, the Hanuman came to his flake, and the other celestial beings also went to his flake, and they were giving up these roars, fighting roars, cries. So he was approaching the Kurus like this, and they were already afraid even before the fight itself started. And there were all the kings there. There was Bhishma, there was Drona, there were Duryodhana and other his other brothers. There were all the Kurus. And single-handedly, Arjuna, he defeated them all in one place. They couldn't do anything. Just he single-handedly himself, he defeated Bhishma, he defeated Drona, he defeated Duryodhana, he defeated Karna also there, and they couldn't do anything. So they were defeated already. And now again, Duryodhana, he's like, nothing happened, you know, we will kill them all. He was defeated by one Pandava and he is now thinking he will kill five. So this is how stupid one can be, you know, when he is proud and he's like overconfident, he is thinking of himself on the level which he is not actually. Because he was simply just calculating and he was greedy. He got this kingdom by cheating, and it was hard for him to give up, of course. Yeah. He was attached to that, you know. It was, how you say, it was easy money for him. Just one gambling match, and the kingdom was his. He was the king of all the world, practically. Officially was Dhritarashtra, of course, but Duryodhana, he was managing everything. So, yeah, it came to this point, and it is the description of these great fighters. I found little details of each of these kings, which is described here. So first one is Drishtaketu. Drishtaketu means by whose brightness is hold. He was the son of Shishupal, who was killed by Krishna. But he took the side of the Pandavas. And in the battle of Kurukshetra, he was killed by Drona. Another one mentioned is Chaitanya, which means intelligent. I don't see any other details here. It just says he was warrior of Yadu dynasty who fought on the side of the Pandavas. Another one is Kashiraj, which means king of Kashi. And also otherwise called Kashya, it was his other name, that means king of Kashi. Then there is this Viryavan, which means the most powerful. The another one is Purujit. It simply means great, heroic, powerful fighter. And of course, he was also Pandava lion. Another one is Shaibya. He belonged to the tribe of Shibis, which I don't know any information of. So yeah, this is the verse 5, and they are all described as Narapungava, which means they were heroes in human society. They were no, at that time they were not ordinary people. They had some kind of, how to say, decency. They were very experienced in their field. They fought according to, they managed and fought according to religious principles. So today's politicians and those days politicians, you cannot compare them. There is like no link to, or no level to compare them on. They were of totally different category. They have a great loyalty to religion and to their superiors, to their teachers. This is, nowadays this is completely lost, this kind of, to say, this kind of life attitude. Nobody ever has these characteristics, personal characteristics. There are just some historical references we can hear of, like in Japan, this culture of samurais. They are also similarly dedicated to the codes of Bushido, they called it. So that was kind of religion, mixed up of religion and fighting codes. And they were very loyal to the emperor of Japan. So whatever the emperor wished, they did it. And to lose a life, it was not a matter for them. It was like part of the business. You know, you just lose life or win, you know, one of these two. There is no other. There is nothing like hide somewhere or run away from the conflict or to give up. These kind of people, they don't do these things, or they don't do financial politics like nowadays so-called warriors do. They do financial politics. It's not war. It's financial politics. We will start war here, and this will be the profit. What do you think about this? You know, yes or no, and like, you know, they vote about this. Yeah. So there is no discussion about some religion or following dharma, you know, following some higher principles. Just financial politics. Whatever is the profit, then if it's good, then okay, we will do it. You know, we will throw some bombs, we will send soldiers, whatever, you know, doesn't matter. So, and this was actually the level of Duryodhana. This was his fault, because he was thinking like this. He was not thinking like warrior. He had, of course, some warrior setup, some experience and training that he had, but his mind degraded by this greed. So he was just thinking about the profit, you know, what will be the gain and what will be the loss. I remember one thing about this Japanese samurais. They were, you know, they were using swords and knives and these kind of things. and they never used the fire weapons, for example. It was under, I mean, this was below their standard. They would never touch and fight with fire weapons. Even the opposite party was shooting at them. Because they knew this is not proper. You can, you know, fire weapon, anybody can shoot a bullet. You can, even a small child, as we can see nowadays, they can carry a weapon and shoot anybody. This is, that's not a war, that's not a battle. You know. So this, all this characteristic of this Narapungawa, these heroes of human society, it's completely lost, practically. People have no clue that it actually is possible to work or to manage society on such a level. So these are my few observations of these verses. Srila Prabhupada is not saying much there. So if anybody else wants to add something or ask, let's discuss.
Hare Krishna. For discussion, you mentioned that Kshatriyas in the olden days, they did not fight for money. But we see that Bhishma Dev, he felt obligated to Duryodhana because he had taken care of him and given him provision and given him house and so forth. Bhishma Dev was the great renunciate. He gave up the kingdom. Actually, he was in line for the kingdom. But because he would not marry, he could not take the position. So like this, say like that, but also these other Kshatriyas, they're also fighting for some reward in terms of maintaining their kingdom. They want to maintain their kingdom, keep their control. So it's very difficult to distinguish sometimes what is someone fighting just for money and someone fighting for honor. Of course, today we don't have any honorable men. We have only Vaishyas who are buying military people and like that. That's what's happening today.
I would say Vaishya, he will just stop with the money. But Kshatriya, he needs the money, of course. He needs the wealth, to say, to perform his duty. But Vaishya, his goal is the money. But the Kshatriya's goal is not the money. It's the means. Even Yudhishthira, before the war, he came crying to Krishna, and he said, you know, we are from kingly order. It was at the time, it was at the end of the exile, actually, so they have nothing. They were beggars. So he came to Krishna and he was crying. We have nothing, you know. And previously we had great riches and opulences, and we were enjoying, and now we have nothing. And this is worse than death, he said, for a Kshatriya, to be poor. He said, Yudhishthira, he said, this is worse than death. Before we had money, we had wealth, and now we have nothing. We cannot live that like this. So we have to fight with the Kurus. That's the reason why we have to fight. This was Yudhishthira's talk. Because then we have properly perform our duties. So, and in the case of Bhishma Dev, also, yes, he was criticized that he was dependent on Duryodhana because of the money and like that. Which is again, it's a similar situation. They will not stop with the wealth because they need to perform the Kshatriya duties. But for that, they need some considerable amount of wealth, actually. And there is another, for Bhishma Dev, there is another reason why he kept with Duryodhana. Because even after Pandu died, I think he made a promise that he will stay on the side of the Kurus until somebody will be put on the throne of the Kurus as a king. And this was not going to be Dhritarashtra because he was blind, because he couldn't be like proper king in that sense. So he gave this, to say, he gave this promise in a little bit despaired mind. It was not considered well what will be the result. But, and because he was so truthful, so he kept to his promise. Even he saw this Duryodhana case there, so he was just sticking to his promise to be there on their side. So that there are actually two reasons for Bhishmadev too. He was there to have some wealth and because of this promise. So now, so present day Kshatriyas, they don't have these higher goals. They just want to get some financial opportunities, and for that they exploit warfare. They use weapons of any kind. They are, for myself, I don't call it a war, you know, it's not a war. If you go somewhere with the jets and tanks, it's not a war, you know. It's just machinery going there and killing anything and everything. It's not a war. So they just use this kind of tool. It's like a slaughter, actually. They use this kind of tool to get their to meet their ends, financial ends. So even they present themselves as politicians, which is wrong, and it's wrong on the side of the general people that they consider them to be politicians. They don't see them as merchants. They are merchants, and they should be addressed as such, because they have no qualifications to be a politician. They just stay on the post, that's it. It's like somebody steal F1 car, you know, Formula 1, and drives it. Doesn't mean he's a driver of F1. He just stole the car and he's driving it, but he's not the pilot of F1. He's not trained in that way. He doesn't know what he's doing at all. So, in my opinion, they are merchants, that's all.
That's a good point. We see some countries, though, just like the civil war that's going on in Iraq right now, and in Syria, these civil wars, these people are fighting for some principle of religion. Of course, they're extremely misguided in the sense that a slight deviation in the beliefs of one religion over another causes them to want to kill the other party. This kind of this is not noble either. This is not even in their scripture that they should be fighting like this amongst themselves. So both of these different groups supposedly honor the Quran, but over a little difference in interpretation, they're willing to kill each other and their families and like this. Ultimately, those kinds of wars, they may appear to be religious wars, but it boils down again to control, financial control, and manipulation.
This is the presentation of the demons that you know, you see the religion, bad religion, you know, what is doing again. This is their media propaganda.
Your point on Iraq was quite accurate. Another example would be Cuba. So at one time Castro was a revolutionist who wanted to overthrow government that was being manipulated by basically the mafia in the United States, and he was was able to get the support of the people to rid the government of all of this type of corruption, but as soon as the war was finished, then he placed himself in control of the country, and even to this day, he's still dictating to the people. His efforts were very shrewd, but his ulterior motive was not to free the people, but to gain control of the country.
Actually, I was in Miami when Castro had his revolution and he took over the country. And I noted that many Cuban people came to America, and they had a very religious ideal, you know, they used to send their children to the same schools I went to and so forth. But at the same time, when Castro took over, he did many, many things that were very advantageous for the country. He created free schools. Today, Cuba has its own doctors. They have their own, health specialists. Everyone is encouraged to do things like exercise. There's many, many different, everyone is being fed in the country. There's food there. People were starving previously. So like this, many disadvantages are there, but Castro did what a king is expected to do. He nationalized the oil company. Standard Oil was there. This is the reason that America has never recognized Cuba, is that Standard Oil was there, and he nationalized that country, that company. He took the profits and used them for the people, not just for the millionaires in America. So as a result, this is what a king does. He carves out his territory, and he regulates within that territory. Now, he may not be a Democrat. He didn't call for elections, you know, on the grand level. But that's because he had the confidence in himself that he was doing the right thing, whether it was right or not, is the thing. Also, of course, he had to repress. Chanakya Pandit says a king has to do two things. He has to take very good care of his sadhana, be very attentive to his sadhana, and he has to protect himself from assassination. And Castro was the victim, or you could say the victim or whatever. He was the target of 40 different assassination attempts. The CIA could not kill him. They were able to kill Kennedy, but they were not able to kill Castro. So like this, we have in our lexicon of successful kings, Castro is very successful. He made his peace with the Catholic Church. He allowed the Church to go on and present its philosophy. I think devotees are there in Cuba now, openly performing Harinam. So they're enjoying some freedoms, but at the same time, to put the thing on the scale of freedom that would be acceptable to the Standard Oil companies, those kinds of corporate interests, would not be possible. So we're not in favor of this idea of going into a country and destroying. As you said very wisely, what is considered war today is just a kind of punishment. People just go in, bomb everything, destroy the country's electric facility, throw them back 200 years into a dark age, create a rampant lawlessness amongst all of the different areas. So strong rule is essential. You have that in America also. There's no question about it. Every country has strong rule. The local people have, you have sheriffs and different police. And they're very competent to maintain. And they're run under the auspice of a mayor. The mayor has a great deal of potency to deal with the police. A sheriff actually is elected by people, and he's the most powerful person in what they call a county. The counties can sometimes be very, very large, as large as some of these kingdoms were in the previous age. So we can say a sheriff now is like a king, but the question that we're concerned with is what is that king doing? Is he doing a good service to the people? Is he educating them? Is he giving them food, making it possible for them to exist and so forth? Or is he, just subjugating them for his own pleasure, for his own aggrandizement? So we see different types of dictators, different types of leaders throughout the world. And you could say there's a scale. Here's a tyrant, and here's a benign despot. And in between, so many different levels of characters populate that scale. So we have to be very careful when we judge a particular situation. I know I had one friend, a lady who went back to Cuba after leaving Cuba as a young girl, and she actually met Castro, and she circulated. She was working on a PhD. And she was studying a medical treatment called flower cure, flower remedies. There's a man who investigated flowers and the different potencies they have. So Cuba is very open to these kinds of cures. You know, they're low cost and they're very effective. Whereas in America, the country is run by big pharmacies, corporate interests. They want you to pay $200 for a pill. And they're very adamant about how wonderful that is for you to have to pay so much in order to extend your life. So this good and bad business, you know, is you can never judge. Someone says, I'm an American. Oh, that's wonderful. You're very fortunate, you know. But it's not true when you see your country go downhill in an oligarchy made out of corporate and 1% rich people. When you see that happening, you become a little bit ashamed. When the country is exporting wars all over the world, you become ashamed. You're not very pleased with that. There's no need for that. There's nothing there for them to gain except oil and make profits. So like this, it's very, very difficult for us to say, and of course these questions of Bhishma, and his alliance with Duryodhana, these politics, they come up in all different states and all different times. People are making concessions here. I was just reading today about this new Prime Minister Modi. So some people had some very good things to say about him. He outlawed cow slaughter in Gujarat. And other people are saying, well, he also is involved in this corruption and that corruption. But to be a politician, to be a king, or to even be a vaisya is a corrupt situation. You're going to engage yourself in some kind of dishonesty. There's no way to be completely honest in those situations. Only the Brahmins are honest. That's why they should be the head of the society. So we don't concern ourselves too much with these kshatriyas. That's why Krishna came, to diminish the burden of the earth that the kshatriya population was causing. And Bhumi Devi herself complained about it. So.
Jay. Thank you. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.